Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your Instagram star turned super global celebrity of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
You can f with me if you wanted to. These expensive, these is red bottoms, these is bloody shoes. Hit the score, I can get them both. I don't want to choose. And I'm quick cutting off, so don't get comfortable. Look, I don't dance now, I make money move. Say, I don't gotta dance, I make money move. If I see you now and speak, that means I don't f with you. I'm a boss, you a worker. I make bloody moves. Now she say she gon' do what or who? Let's find out and see. Cardi B, you know where I'm at. You know where I be. You in the club just to party. I'm there, I get paid a fee. I be in and out them banks so much I know they tired of me. Honestly, don't give a f about who in front of me. Drop 2 mixtapes in 6 months. We're breaking as hard as me. I don't bother with these. Don't let these bother me. They see pictures, they say goals. Bitch, I'm who they tryna be. Look, I might just chill in some babe. I might just chill with your boo. I might just spill on your babe. My p- feel like a lake. He wanna swim with his face. I'm like, okay. I let him get what he want. He buy me easy.
That's Bodak Yellow. Everybody at the table today has their Mona Scott residual checks. That's right.
Coming soon.
Oh my God. Yo, it's Love and Hip Hop Gray Lady. I am here to talk about Cardi B this week, and I am joined... Honestly, there are no better people for part one. There's going to be part two later in the podcast. But part one, I am joined by Joe Coscarelli, pop music reporter in the New York Times.
I'm here.
And also the golden girl with the pink hair. It's Rawia Kamir.
I'm also here.
Deputy editor of The Fader. Take that. That way. That's an offset joke, just FYI.
Do we want to just jump right in and talk about the validity of this relationship?
I think it's super real. You saw the spank going into the Jeep in Fashion Week.
It's real.
It's real. Yo, first, Rawia knows.
I believe it.
Okay, so Cardi B is here, and Cardi B is aflame. Everything is happening. Bodak Yellow is number two on the charts. This is a beautiful ascent of not just for a great person, but also like a genuine New York street rap record that just kind of like muscled its way and is only Taylor Swift stands between Cardi B and Billboard number one domination.
But for now.
For now, yeah.
For now.
The numbers, some numbers are going up and some numbers are going down.
Joe, I know you want to talk about numbers. I love some data on the podcast. Yo, let's talk data just for a minute. Like, we're going to get into like real deep Cardi stuff. Like, you know, I know Rawia has been following Cardi since she was like in seventh grade. So I know she's got all the childhood tea. I've been listening to Volume 1 and Volume 2 of the mixtapes. We got deep cuts off that. But Joe, I know you want to talk data. Let's share feelings
via
numbers.
I'm just impressed that this song just keeps coming. It's like, when did Bodak Yellow come out?
Like 7 weeks ago or 9 weeks ago?
Yeah, it was like early June, mid-June.
Right, but I get song sales and streams every week in my email from Nielsen. And
courtesy of Nielsen.
Look What You Made Me Do, 57.7 million streams last week. That's like a huge number.
That's major. It's a Taylor Swift number.
Right behind it, Cardi B. On Taylor's on what, week two?
Yeah.
Cardi B on week...
10, 11,
yeah,
9.
Yeah, multiple months, 42 million streams, mm-hmm. up 3 million from last week. Like, I don't know.
We're not saying, but could happen.
It's just, yeah, it's a real song. And I was a skeptic.
Are we going to report live from Washington Heights in the Bronx the day it goes number one? That's the real question.
Hell yeah.
Are we going to go to Fordham?
Yeah.
There's going to be a parade.
Hell yeah. Okay. All right. So field trip to Fordham when that happens.
I know we're going to be let down if something else happens, but you know.
I'm going to say 30% chance.
Okay.
Rihanna and Beyonce better keep whatever they have in their pockets yes. until we do it, and then they
for the culture,
they want.
Right? Yeah. Stay away for the culture.
Yeah, I think
sit
they will.
Quiet.
Yeah, they know
wait.
They know
just
their
wait.
Places. Yeah, but I actually heard Bodak Yellow for the first time when I was reporting the Fader cover story with Cardi.
Go cop that. Go cop. Is there a poster of that cover yet?
Yes, of course. You can get a poster of any Fader cover.
At thefader.com?
Yeah.
All right, go cop that.
Really plugging a lot of merch the last few weeks.
I just feel like the way I want to remember this era of pop music is through merch.
Yeah.
So, go cop that. Yeah, I might cop that.
Yeah. Cop it and also stay tuned. So we were in a car on our way to her house in Jersey, and she was like, I want to play you the song. I think it's good, but I'm not really sure.
Oh, really? That's how she sold it? Yeah. She wasn't like, this is my breakout?
No, she's like, I have this freestyle, and
this
I'm thinking
my
maybe.
Despacito.
I don't think she had any idea.
Really?
Then she played it, and I was like, oh my God, this is so hard. And the Uber driver was like, please play that again.
Oh, wow.
And this is like a middle-aged man.
the real test. The Uber driver test.
I want to say I was not driving Uber. Just want to say it was not me. Okay.
And then she was like, it is kind of hard, right? Like, yeah, but it's just a freestyle. And I was like, I think this is a song. Like, this could, I didn't think it would do the numbers it's doing,
so
but.
This is you. You did this.
You A&R'd this record.
Oh my God. Wow. Wait, do you have points on this record?
I should.
You should get the top. Trust me, all the points I should have gotten over the years. So Bodak Yellow is influenced by / inspired by No Flockin', which is a Kodak Black record. The flow is sort of patterned on it, although I happen to think Cardi goes a little harder. This is controversial. Shouts to Andrew Nosnitsky, a.k.a. Nas, who basically insulted me on Twitter for that opinion. Shouts to Nas. It was good to see you in Oakland last week.
Should we play a little bit of No Flockin'?
Let's
just
definitely play No
Flockin'. Reference?
Yeah, let's play No Flockin'. Saw that soft record. And that's so sad. KKK. Young, I got old cash spazzing on the ass. I got Prada on my ass. Got my lab with man popping like a damn tag. Shopping on the ass. I just bought a new old jet. Yeah, it's so fast. Smoking flow. You a jackass. All I smoke is gas. Don't you ask me where the pole at. Where your clothes at. I ain't talking about my damn, but y'all tripping too. Is it you? Damn my nigga, what the hell got into you? Project baby, y'all was skipping in the hallway. I was skipping school on my P's and Q's. On them jiggers, call me Jigaboo. Bleeding concrete, bet you won't come across the street. Pardon me, I don't talk to you, so don't you talk to me. I ain't dissing on nobody, be I'm vibing on the beat. Honestly, I'm just trying to be. I just gotta be trying to get over on anything they telling lies to me. I spent five on my. So, okay, so she played this for you in the car, but again, in her mind, it was a freestyle. And,
yeah.
Like, in essence, it's not that different from any kind of, like, New York rapper rapping either over a familiar beat or in a familiar flow pattern. It's just, like, kind of a classic New York thing to do.
Yeah, and I mean, and they're label mates. They're, you know, both on Atlantic. And, you know, it made sense. Like, she was releasing a bunch of stuff. She was putting out, I think something like a video a week. She had, like, a whole summer planned of releases. And this one just happened to hit. And, you know, it makes sense. But I don't think anyone expected that it would go the way it has.
In talking to friends about this record, especially women, it's a hard record that seems to be a female anthem. Like, do you think that that is, like, crucial in its success?
I mean, I guess. But the first thing I thought when I heard it was, oh, finally, a woman rapper that dudes won't be too, you know, fragile masculinity to bang.
Because it's
shouts
tough.
To the FMEs, yeah. FME gang, yeah. FME boys.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like every summer there is something similar. It's usually some sort of like skeletal sounding New York track. This year it's Cardi. Last year it was Young M.A.
Right.
I think it's great that Cardi's a woman and she's doing her thing, but I think that's just a part of it.
Right.
You know?
And I'm glad you mentioned Young M.A. because I do think there was a moment early in the success of Bodak Yellow where you're like, okay, we've seen this before a little bit. And obviously the narrative of Young M.A. is very different than the narrative of Cardi, but there was that moment where you're like, is this just like a New York thing that kind of like flares really fast and everybody's like, oh, and then like 6 months from now, people are like, where is that person? But it's also important to remember that this is actually kind of the second Cardi hit of the year. Lick is actually an older record from 2016, but this year is really the year it started to kind of like hit a little bit. And that's a record with Offset. Let's actually listen to a little bit of Lick. 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 Run up on me, you get hit. Run up. And know my with this. Yeah. From New York,
Sister, wanna bend that? Sister, wanna bend that? Got some haters in my clique. Looking like a quarter lick. Looking like a quarter lick. Look at me, look at me. They ain't like me before, now they booking me. Look at me. The glow up got people shook at me. They let Cardi B, what you cooking, B? I got me on some new shit. I swear, got me feeling ruthless. Too much undoubting me. That's why I had to just prove it. I remember walking in the stores. I couldn't buy nothing. They look at me stank. Nah, I just walk in the stores. I like it, I cop it. I don't even think. Bank tellers asking for info. Cause now my deposits on Kimbo. So that, give me my money. Why the f*** do I send all this info? Run up, get done up. Guess who is ready for a come up? Promise you I didn't luck up. Was grinding all night, didn't sleep till the sun up. Now I gotta pull my walk around like I'm that every n***a wanna hit. Looking like a quarter lick.
If I was putting myself in the head of an A&R person, whoever got that record together was like, oh, this is the breakout record. And then it kind of like halfway went there, and then it kind
of... Was there a version of it without Offset?
Not that I've heard.
There was a version of it without Offset.
I think they added him a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah. They added
him... He's on the mixtape version, I thought.
Well, the mixtape had... It happened really quickly because they met... Fell in love.
Right.
Made a great song.
Oh, I feel
but
so warm.
But, you know, I was hearing Lick coming out of cars. You know, yeah. I live in Brooklyn. I was hearing it everywhere. And I didn't, you know, I only stopped hearing it when I started hearing Bodak Yellow. So it wasn't like it fell off. Bodak Yellow just sort of surpassed it, I think.
Can you think of another example of, like, a single sort of, like, eating and, like, growing? You know, it's sort of like, it was like a Transformers moment, right? It like Bodak Yellow took the momentum of Lick and then just sort
kind
of
like
blasted
like
off.
Like piggybacked it a little bit. And
it's a good strategy that little 1-2 punch. Yeah. It's like growth, like natural growth.
Exactly.
And also what's interesting is like Lick, at least with Offset, is like very much the A&R'd idea of like what a female rapper major label song should be. And then Bodak Yellow is like the sort of like, this was just for a mixtape. But it also, I think, is very reflective of where we are in 2017, where it's like, actually, that's what takes off. And Lick is kind of like, it's cool, like it's good. But like this other thing, which is tougher and a little bit more, you know, I'll say organic, but like is a little bit rougher, actually is the thing that people find themselves gravitating towards.
Yeah. And I mean, the interesting thing about that is that Lick and that whole tape, you know, that happened, I think, like, before she was signed, or at least very early in her relationship with Atlantic. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's that flip that you don't really see very often.
Am I right to think that she got signed in between the two mixtapes? Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think she might have already started recording the second mixtape.
But it wasn't out, I don't think, before she was signed.
I think the deal hadn't been announced yet, but she was signed when they were promoting the second mixtape.
Sure. Yeah. So the two tapes are Gangsta Bitch Music Volume 1 and Gangsta Bitch Music Volume 2. And Rawia, you spent a lot of time with Cardi, not just for this Fader cover, but also an earlier Fader story, which came out, I think, early 2016.
Yeah.
So you've seen sort of two distinct phases and talked to her about various parts of her life and know a lot of history. One detail that's in one of your pieces, I can't remember which I thought was very telling and like almost comforting, was that her manager sort of like suggested that she rap kind of because like of how she speaks basically and like how she would casually kind of interact with music. And she's like, well, maybe if that's how you just naturally are, maybe you should just make a song, which is sort of how I would like to think these things should happen, as opposed to like just some guy on YouTube who's famous and is like, I'm a rapper now, where Cardi is like just a musical person by nature.
Yeah, we should pull back and say that she was a reality star before she was a rapper.
Oh, sure. Well, I was going to, yes.
Do you want to do the quick bio?
Yeah, sure. And I think even before she was a reality star, she was doing really well on Instagram. And that's when
the real thing.
Yeah, like that's when I first came across her. My friends who lived in really all parts of the world had just like come across her on Vine and Instagram and were like, this woman is amazing. Like, you need to follow her. And then her posts were getting sort of reblogged. And this was during peak Baller Alert, Shade Room era. So she was just, you know, getting a lot of attention.
Are you calling that era dead?
It's not dead, but, you know, I think it's
not.
It's
not what it used to be?
Yeah. I think they.
It doesn't have that free song that it had at that moment.
Yeah, they know what they're doing now. I think at the time it was a little bit more, mm-hmm. you know.
It was not self-aware. It wasn't a self-aware.
Not unlike Cardi B.
Yeah, exactly. So, cheers to that. You know, I get weather news, political news, all kinds of things right. from Baller. Anyway. So. So, yeah, so she was doing really well. And I think by the time she actually signed up to do Love and Hip Hop, she was already doing really well for herself.
Oh,
she,
yeah.
I remember her early on telling me that her per episode appearance fee on Love and Hip Hop wasn't what she was making for a walkthrough at a club.
I right. believe that.
So,
like, reality television is like not super lucrative.
It's like an internship.
For the participants.
You know?
Yeah.
It's exposure.
And I think that's a thing that. Certainly, like, for casual viewers, they're not always aware of is you assume you're on TV, you have 10 episodes on VH1, like, you must be making a lot of money. And, like, maybe you are, but it's from secondary things. It's from appearances. It's from contracts. It's from Instagram ads, you know, fit, you know.
Flat tummy tea.
Yeah, all that stuff. So Cardi, in a way, when she signed on to do Love and Hip Hop, my instinct was, wow, Love and Hip Hop is falling off because they need her way more than she needs them. That was my immediate reaction.
I think it took them a second to catch on to that because even in her first season, she didn't appear until, like, I think the second or third episode, and she was sort of billed as a secondary character. Mm-hmm. It became clear pretty quickly that she was a star, obviously.
Duh.
But, yeah, it took them a second to realize that, and I think by that point it was just way too late in the game for Love and Hip Hop. She had already taken off.
She did one season or two seasons?
She did two seasons.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then she's not going back. Which
is
why
she's
I thought
done.
It was funny that she... She says that she gets a Mona Scott residual check, right. another check. And I was kind of like, I actually think there are no more Mona Scott checks. I don't know.
Not to harp on the details.
Yeah, no, maybe that's true.
I don't know what the payment plan is.
Yeah, like right. there's like Uzbekistan syndication checks that still come.
Exactly. Maybe she'll do a reunion. Who knows?
It's phenomenal. That sounds great.
But I'm curious about, like, because this when I said earlier that I was a skeptic, it wasn't necessarily that I was skeptical of Bodak Yellow, but just like of her plan that she was going to be a rapper. Like, I don't know if rap is really more stable than walkthroughs and reality TV and fit tea. And it makes sense with her verbal gifts that she could do it, but I sort of felt like you're so good at being a personality, like being on television, being an actress. Like, you could be Wendy Williams. You could be, you know, you could have a 24-hour-a-day Sirius channel. Like, I would listen to that. You know, like,
speakers blasting out of every corner in the house.
I'm curious, since you were there, Rawia, like, in that transition moment when she was like, no, I'm going to be an artist, like, what you think the thought process was and why she decided rap was, like, her best pathway to cementing her fame.
Honestly, you know, I was a skeptic too, and I think she wasn't entirely convinced either. She just happened to have these people around her who really believed in her and who still believe in her and who pushed her. And so when I did the first story on her, and it was like early 2016, she just released, like, she just had two songs out. I think one was some sort of freestyle. She had a remix of a Shaggy song, super random.
sure.
And, I mean, who among us doesn't?
Yeah.
So fair point.
So she was just like, I'm going to try this thing. Why not? Like, I have this opportunity and I made it this far. There's tons of other pretty women in New York with a lot of Instagram followers. None of them have made it this far. So why not try?
Yeah.
And then I think she did the classic rapper thing of locking herself up in someone's studio for a bunch of months and just doing it until she got better, until she found her voice. And I think that's, you know, when the second mixtape came out, I think that's when things really changed for her.
In preparation for this, I went back and listened to both mixtapes. And the thing that really jumped out at me about the difference between those two tapes is volume one is like, there's kind of no way other way to put it. It's very much about strip clubs, or it's strip club records, mm-hmm. like records designed for strip clubs, or kind of like the experience of being in that universe. And volume two is not like that at all. Volume two is just like, I'm trying to make bangers. Like, and so that shift, I guess volume one was probably made in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And if I have the math right, I think she had maybe just quit dancing right around that time. It was like sort of in that space. So it was interesting. I'd like to play a song off of volume one, which is Trick.
Oh, you thought I liked you for you? No, you anything we have say in common?
Boy, you's a trick. You ain't nothing but a trick. You catching feelings like a hoe, you's a trick. No love for a trick. No love for a No love for her.
And Ellen, what you mean to yourself when you say we not have nothing in common? Both of us is in Instagram, we from the same island, we baby. You Dominican, I'm Haitian, we belong side by side together, we. Let's just get married. Put a wing on it, you want that? Come on, doll. Don't do that to me.
So Trick is preceded on volume one by Trick Skit, which is her basically talking to a Haitian guy who wants to buy her all these things or is buying her all these things. And it sort of captures the conversation between the two of them about the kind of psychological and economic exchange between the two of them. And then there's a song kind of on the subject. And there's a bunch of moments on that first tape that are like very much about that ecosystem. And I remember I didn't listen to volume one until after I had heard volume two. So I don't know if I thought about it in this sort of ordinal way, but like she's a good rapper. And I think because people either came to her through Instagram or came to her through Love and Hip Hop, maybe they weren't ready to accept that she was a good rapper on those terms. But like on this song and many others on the tape, she's just a legit good rapper.
I mean, she also seems to have like a real musical background. Like you mentioned in your cover story, that original video of her singing and dancing to Lady Gaga at a talent show, like in high school. Mm-hmm. And I remember listening to her on some podcasts a few years ago when she was talking about being a stripper, being a dancer, and that they would know the songs, like, you know, as stories that have been told in Atlanta. But I think like she told specifically a story about Bobby Shmurda and like his crew, GS9, coming into the club and playing and putting on like one of their mixtapes and being so impressed that like Cardi and like some of the other women already knew the words to like this local underground rap. So it's obviously a world that she was plugged into. And
free Bobby Shmurda.
Right. And then the other side of it, I think like another thing you describe is like her facility with language is just like unparalleled. And you call her tense agnostic, which as one of the reasons people sort of like poke fun at the way she speaks, but you're right, she's like, I mean, she's a poet, like just like on a sentence level.
Can I just say, a podcast never gets cold. I just had to say that at some point during the recording today. Okay, we can continue. Language is like incredibly important. Not just she has this very elegant but off kilter, and it's very particular. You know, I mean, sounds like girls I grew up with in Brooklyn. So like, there's that, but also like she has a whimsy and a kind of like almost like magical element to like some of the intersections of words, which I, you know, is great. And that's what made her so successful on Instagram. We really haven't talked very much about the Instagram period of her life, but that to me is really like way more than Love and Hip Hop. Like that to me is the thing that sets the table, not just for the type of music she makes and also like how that music sounds, but also for music distribution avenues.
Right.
I mean, she already lived on the Explore page. Right. That was already where she was.
Look, I mean, she's brilliant. Like, you know, I ended up watching Love and Hip Hop as research for these stories, but she is who she is on Instagram in the same way that she is who she is on record. And that's what's so appealing about her. And, you know, Black people and people of color and women in particular have to use language in ways that other people don't. And I think that's something that just comes naturally to her. She's from New York, but she has a Dominican parent, a Trini parent.
Same. Shout out to my Dominicans. I have not yet asked my abuelita what she thinks about Cardi B, but I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, Cardi's abuelita is the most adorable. You can see a lot about her.
Stay tuned for the Joe Coscarelli Bachata record.
Coming soon. Yeah.
So, you know, and when she was working as a dancer, she had to communicate with people to make a living. So one of the things she often says is that she figured out how to speak Russian to the Russian clients at certain clubs and French to other clients at other clubs. And in some places, she'd have to speak Spanish because that's what, you know, would earn her the most money. So it really is sort of a no-brainer that would translate on record. But it's, you know, the reasons that people don't see that at first are pretty simple. It's just racism.
Yeah. Yeah. The inventiveness, especially in Instagram, which when she was really starting to be popping on Instagram, it's not the 2017 version IG stories, like every single human being. It felt like a more closed off ecosystem.
Yeah, she was like vlogging when Instagram videos first started, but they were only like, what, 10 or 15 seconds long.
Yeah.
Yeah, people were trying to figure out what to do with that platform. And yeah, it came naturally to her. And I think, you know, I think a lot of the conversation around her suggests that it happened by accident. And sure, there's a lot of it that's, you know, circumstantial, and there's always, you know, some element of luck. But she knows exactly what she's doing, and she figured that out pretty early on.
And she was always really good to me at telegraphing, like, her authenticity in a way. Like, you say, like, her being herself is, like, her biggest asset, but she was good at showing you that that's what she was doing. Like, she would put up a video in, like, full makeup and hair and dress, and then she would do one, like, just waking up or, like, just out of the tub, like, hair and curlers. Like, you know, this was before she spent all that money to fix her teeth. Like, she was, you know, she was just very, she opened that door in a way that I think, like, some of the best social media celebrities, like, of the last 20 years have done, which is, like, show you the ugly parts in addition to, like, all of their wit and charm.
Also, a thing that comes up in your stories is how all the things that Joe was just mentioning are not things that are curated for her internet personality. That just literally was your experience just hanging out with her. I'd be curious to hear a little bit more about that. And also, how cognizant were you of watching her kind of decide what to post or what not to post, or how to kind of decide what parts of her day should be shared and in what way?
In a lot of ways, she's a really private person. She can be really shy and quiet, reserved. But, you know, when she switches on, she's just on. And I think that sometimes she posts things and regrets it. I think where she is right now and in the past, like, year or so that I've spent a little bit of time with her, I've seen her sort of try to figure out what the most appropriate balance is for wherever she is in her career. But I think for the most part, she's just responding to people, whether it's people in her life or people in her comments. There's a lot of, like, I'm upset at this dude right now and I just have the impulse to say something about it, in the same way that another 24-year-old woman in a different circumstance would. You know, she's just funnier.
And that's a real hip-hop thing too, right? Like, constantly talking to your, like, invisible enemies and haters and doubters and people who wronged you. You know, just this idea
except
that
her haters are really visible. And
they're in the comments. In the
and they can be really, really cruel. And, something that she often says is that she knows intellectually that she has to not look at it, but she can't not. And yeah, there are waves, and I think that right now she's on the upswing, but at any moment she's very aware that that could change. And I think there's an anxiety that comes with that, whether you're Cardi B or John Caramonica.
Oh, damn. Wow. True story, though.
What is the next step in her career? Like, how does she capitalize on Bodak Yellow? And, yeah, like, so what do you do next? I guess she says she's going to put out an album.
Or to unite those two threads, obviously she's aware that things could poof or disappear or can backlash at any moment. But does she not feel more stable given that she's connected to an established record label? I assume there's advance money. Like, she just had a very big fashion week where, like, she was, like, very much feted and sort of, like, included in that conversation in a way that she probably hadn't been any time before. Does that not create more of a sense of calm and lack of fear in her?
I mean, I think being tied to a record label never really,
we've seen these people. Sorry, come
my bad. My bad. My bad.
Ask all our friends on the show how it feels to be tied to a record label.
So, yeah, but I think, you know, the thing is that she was doing well. She had an income stream that was pretty, you know, reliable before Bodak Yellow came out. Like, there are people who mess with her, who like her. Regardless, she was going to have fans even if Bodak Yellow didn't come out. So now, you know, it's like you go to PS1 warm-up and there is, like, a 55-year-old woman from the Ukraine who's so excited to see Cardi.
Did you see that?
Yes.
I didn't see that.
Yeah,
it
was great.
I did not see the 55-year-old Ukrainian woman, but I believe that she was there.
Wait, where was that person?
Right by the thing. She was there.
Damn.
Yeah, she brought her son. It was really cute.
Wow.
But, you know, so there's obviously that, but I think, you know, I think she knows that she was going to be fine to some extent, even if Bodak Yellow hadn't happened. But I think she's also at a point now where she, you know, you're a human, you're an artist, you want to do better. You don't, it's not just about money, right? So I think there's a lot about where she's going that's about proving to people that she's legitimate. And I think that when her album comes out, you know, I'm sure it'll be good. I don't know if there's anything that can top Bodak, whether, you know, it just...
Yeah, it's just a moment in time.
Yeah. And just the way it happened.
But I think it's interesting in going back and listening to those tapes. You sort of can't talk about Cardi without talking about Nicki a little bit, and about talking sort of the sort of many phases of Nicki and kind of the kind of persistent anxiety that surrounds Nicki's career, which is that she has kind of like abdicated some of the street credibility or some of that immediacy in favor of like swish swish, you know, mm-hmm. And that in so doing has left an opportunity for any number of other people to take that space and to make more of that space, to do more with it. And so what's striking to me is when I was listening to that first tape, there is to me what seemed like kind of like almost like a mid-period Nicki record. The track is called Selfish, and it comes after a different skit. Cardi really went in on skits on the first mixtape. The skit is called Her Perspective, and it's incredibly traumatizing. It's very, very dark, and we probably won't play it because it's you couldn't bleep. There's a lot of bleeping it would require, and it's about an abusive boyfriend, and it's about a sort of toxic relationship. And again, it sort of like seems to emanate out of this that ecosystem that a lot of the tape kind of comes out of. But coming right in the middle of the tape, it really hits like a hammer. It's very, very bad. It's very rough. And then what comes after it, and we'll play a little bit of Selfish, is this like reflective, contemplative, very emotional song. And it's a real jolt in the middle of all these kind of other songs. And it to me, it points a way forward. But let's listen to Selfish.
I gave you more than I gave myself. So loyal to you that I betray myself. Well, I guess I'ma wither away. You a snake and you chose to slither today. I gave my all, my love and my trust, but I guess my all just wasn't enough. Yeah, there's something about you, I can't help it. But I'ma do for myself, I'm being selfish.
Baby, melody is the voice I need. Makes me skip a beat, yeah. And baby, you know it, yeah. But it's hard to show it, yeah. See, the one I love used to be in clubs, used to fuck with us, yeah. And I can't expose it, yeah. Cause she already know it, yeah. But why don't you ask me why it's so hard to fall in love? Why don't you ask me why can I never ever
So when I hear that song, I'm like, oh, that's Cardi. She already knows how to do that.
Well, because Nicki laid that foundation. And
that's certainly part of it.
Like, I think, however you feel about current day Nicki Minaj, like, I think she, and as much as she denies that she's sort of feeling the heat, like, I think she knows.
Oh, she's gotta know.
She's put out a few songs recently that she says aren't about certain people that I don't believe. But I don't know. I think she feels the
shrug emoji. You know.
Like. Yeah. I think she feels the encroachment. And obviously, it's like sad and depressing that we have to only have this conversation about like one or two or three people.
And it's also worth saying the encroachment isn't just coming from Cardi. I mean, obviously, there's the whole Remy situation. You know, like Crystal Canes is out here making great records. You know, like there's a lot happening. It's actually kind of a really good moment, I feel, that people are starting to pay attention. But, you know, from the Nicki perspective, when Nicki was Nicki, there wasn't a number two. Like Chanel West Coast is like your number two.
Do we already forget about Iggy Azalea?
Who? Who? Shouts to Doreen, who still is on Twitter, said the other day that she's still writing for Pussy, the OG Iggy Azalea track, which we will not play tonight. But shouts to Doreen.
I don't know, Rawia, how are you feeling about that Nikki space at the moment?
I wish her all the best.
Did you just send her like a, what are those things called?
An edible arrangement?
Yeah. Like a paperless post or something?
No, I love Nikki, and I think that she's going to be fine. I think she needs to do a little soul searching. You know, the difference is that Cardi doesn't know how to not be herself. And I think Nikki has been doing too much of the opposite.
Yeah. At least not yet. Yeah. Like Cardi, there may come a time. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cardi, I don't know.
Can we also shout out Kid Mero for going in with the barbs on Twitter the other day?
Oh, did he?
He said that it should be Cardi on Rake It Up, the Yo Gotti song.
Ah!
And the Nicki Minaj fans found that tweet and let him have it for the next few hours. But he fought, you know, he fought back. We'll put it at that.
Wow. If
you
need, it's a very BX podcast.
If you want to spend half an hour, just find Mero's
get
tweets.
Get your tweet deck up.
At all the barbs.
The barbs are one of the most intense fan bases.
They're brutal.
Yeah.
It's rough. okay. So coming off Nicki, and obviously Nicki coming off of a high profile dual rapper relationship, Meek Mill, in case our younger fans maybe don't know who that is.
Too mean today. Too mean.
And Cardi has popped up with a bow of her own. That is Offset, who we heard a little bit of earlier. Offset's from Migos. He was not left off Bad and Bougie.
He anchored it, in fact.
True story. Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, it's like in my, you know, Quavo has sort of always seemed like he's going to be the breakout star. But like Offset could be Offset. Could be Offset. So Offset and Cardi have been in Fashion Week the past week, looking beautiful. Offset wearing some wild Balenciaga ski boot situation. It was very intense. There's a lot of like tight fabrics going on. There is the thing which I alluded to earlier where they're getting into like an SUV and she like crawls in before him and he just like very casually spanks her in full view of every paparazzi and like probably kid with like teenager with an iPhone. Joe, my celebrity relationship truther friend, where you at on this?
I don't know what's in any of these people's hearts. Like, all, I wish them all the best, as Rawia would say. But I just, you know, it's true that, this is a separate podcast, but it's true that celebrity relationships tend to pop up at opportune marketing moments, right?
Maybe it's just when you're popping is when you get to date another famous person.
I think that's the obvious rejoinder.
Joe, you're popping? Like, what's up?
But I think regardless of how much they love each other, like it's really good for them, for their brands at this moment. It gives Offset some separation from his trio, Migos.
Yes.
And as you say, like in the Baller Alert ecosystem, like there isn't a hotter, more influential couple. The hashtags are popping.
But you're about to hit us with the actually?
No, I'm just...
You think it's real or no? Joe, don't give me the actual shrug.
It's not for me to say.
Rawia.
I mean, I remember the day they met. Like they met at that Bad and Bougie party. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Were you there?
I was not there.
Women only.
Women
Bad and
only.
Yeah.
I got a lot of texts about it.
Yeah,
it
me
seemed
too.
Cute, and you know, I think when I was reporting the cover with Cardi, there were some moments that suggested that things were happening that seemed like a real relationship.
Okay, I like that. I believe you.
Yeah,
you're a reporter,
and I think you know if it's. If they both get something out of it, then why the hell not?
I agree. And I also like in the
this is actually more skepticism from both of y'all.
I like
I just think love is real.
The New York Times Cardi piece that Joanna did, yeah. She refers to him as this boy I'm dating.
Yes.
Which is that seems real to me.
Yeah.
That's like the most real.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's like actually yes.
I think, you know, Cardi is understandably concerned because so much of her previous relationship ended up on Love and Hip Hop.
Right.
And so she's, yeah, I think she's being smart.
Did
about
she make
it.
Out with DJ Self on Love and Hip Hop? Was that a thing? Am I imagining that?
No, that was a thing.
That was real, right?
They had a thing, but yeah, then she had a
not,
in prison.
Right, that's not Gwinnin.
Let's just say I don't want Cardi and Offset to have a reality show.
No.
No.
Maybe if they last like 10 years.
Right.
Seriously, if they last 10 years and then it's like a cool mid-30s reality show.
Yeah, if they do the Gucci Osbournes and Keisha.
Yeah. I'm into that.
Yeah.
But yeah, like the Gucci and Keisha thing. Like that's a late in life thing. But now you can't.
They're
too soon.
They're young.
They're very
Let
young.
Let them have their fun.
Yeah. All right. With that, let's close out this part of the podcast with what Robbie said in mind. Leave that bitch alone.
Leave that bitch alone. Leave that bitch alone. You knew that I was crazy. Said I thought you took her home. Now I'm going through your phone. Seeing all these hoes. You knew that I didn't like her. What's up with crazy shit you on? You want me to come to your crib and get comfortable? What if I wanna move in and shit? I will show up on some random bitch. Don't let me catch up. If you want a chance at shit, I wanna do it. You should just dead it. I swear to God, you gon' regret it. Watch when I start asking you why the fuck gon' take so long to answer my message. Leave that bitch alone. Leave that bitch alone. You knew that I was crazy. Why the fuck you took her home? Now I'm going through your phone. Seeing all these hoes. You knew that I didn't like her. What's up with crazy bitch you on?
And we're back with part two of the podcast this week. Your front row to the come up, to the glow up of Cardi B. We just talked about music, and now we're going to talk about style. And you know if we're talking about style, you know it's Joanna Nikas in the building. What's up?
What's up?
Joanna's a senior staff editor here at the paper in the styles department and has also the distinction of having followed Cardi around for a day for a story that ran Styles a few weeks ago.
Yep.
And also has been seeing her out and about at Fashion Week. Today is the last day of New York Fashion Week.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Right. So by the time people hear this, New York Fashion Week will be but a memory.
Right.
But if we look back, if we can already look back at 2017 NYFW, Cardi was having a good week.
Yeah.
That's how it seemed.
It seemed like the Cardi moment.
On Instagram, at least, because they stopped inviting me. Just FYI, if anybody's listening. So talk to us about the week in Cardi B.
The shows that I saw Cardi at were Helmut Lang, which was Shayne Oliver's debut collection, mm-hmm. Rihanna's Fenty show. She was at Christian Siriano, Laquan Smith. I think that was it.
The Blondes, I think.
Oh, the Blondes also. Yeah, the Blondes.
So it was like a mix of kind of insurgent designers, established labels, celebrity labels.
Right.
Like she did a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
But she did not do like the more kind of like staid, old money, mainline fashion house stuff, right?
Yeah, like she didn't go to Kors or like Ralph Lauren or any of those New York institution fashion labels.
I love my podcast listeners. But I would assume that many of them are not familiar with the kind of mechanics of how someone ends up in the front row of a fashion show, especially someone who, say, 12 months ago was probably not in the front rows of any fashion shows.
Right.
So explain how Cardi gets in the door and gets on the front row here.
Right. Well, I think in Cardi's case, it's probably a little bit different because I had talked to Patience, her PR right-hand woman, earlier today, and she had said that, you know, even 6 months ago, they had reached out to a bunch of places and were just getting no's about Fashion Week or, you know, didn't get the invitations that they wanted. And this was a big moment for her because she did get invited to, like, Alexander Wang, which was one of the biggest shows of New York Fashion Week, and she actually performed at Wang. And so I think in her case, it was just designers that really, like, appreciated Cardi for Cardi and wanted her to be at the show, wanted to be affiliated with her and who she was. And so they reached out to like her team and that's how it kind of happened.
So it was coming from the designers this time around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Rather than them, you know, Patience said she would send press releases and photos of Cardi and they would be like, we don't know who she is.
They're like,
and
nah.
So, yeah.
Nah.
Not this time
They're
around.
They're on
though.
Instagram. They weren't on the Explore page. Maybe if they were on the Explore page more, they would have been more excited.
Right.
So, as a sort of interested observer of fashion, a thing that I've always kind of been amused by is how in each Fashion Week cycle, you have these kind of like small supernovas of like people who, like I said, weren't there 12 months ago, but all of a sudden became a thing.
Right.
So do you think that Cardi's sort of supernova moment in this past week is only attributable to the fact that she has a hot record? Or do you think it's like a bigger thing about her personality and kind of how she engages with the world?
Anybody that's been following Cardi B's career knows that if you underestimate her, you will be wrong. And
true. And she's not Shmegula Degula.
Yeah. And like I spoke to Laquan Smith, who's had a relationship with her. He's a designer that's had a relationship with her for a while. And he even said that you know, when he first started dressing her, people were like, why are you doing that? Mm-hmm. And he stuck with her. And so I think that if people don't get it this time around, they'll get it next time around.
Right.
And the way that she's kind of combating just being like another super Fashion Nova person that's no pun intended, Fashion Nova. She does love Fashion Nova. And okay, she will keep wearing Fashion Nova.
Yes, I have heard. Yes. So let's just a quick sidebar.
Quick sidebar.
I'm so excited to talk about Fashion Nova on the podcast. Can you explain a little bit about Fashion Nova for all my listeners? And explain why it's important that Cardi B has worn it. And you said earlier, will continue to wear it.
Well, Fashion Nova started really on Instagram, and they catered to women with curves. Their jeans, as Cardi has explained to me, are stretchy and, you know, more like jegging type material. Mm-hmm. And she told me, girl, they will make your ass look fat.
Hey, now.
And
Russell's paper. Okay. Yes.
Fashion Nova was one of the first people to actually send Cardi clothes and like really support her from the beginning. Mm-hmm. So she's very loyal, from what I've realized, with the designers that have supported her from the beginning. She said she'll always wear Fashion Nova, just like she always shows up at Laquan Smith's shows, or she'll show up at the Blondes. They were one of the first people to dress her. For now, you know, when I saw Cardi at the Blondes, I was like, okay, that's kind of an interesting choice. I hadn't realized that she had a relationship and they had dressed her on a lot of her tour stuff. Mm. Because Blondes is kind of this over-the-top, I mean, it makes sense with her aesthetic, over-the-top fashion. And they attract, like, if you go to one of their shows, it's all these kind of, like, New York eccentrics. Mm. Really cool people in the front row, but kind of an older guard of fashion of, like, very eccentric people that, like, Bill Cunningham would have loved to shoot and would have been in the front row. Yeah, miss you, Bill. And so it was an interesting choice when I saw her there, but then when I knew that she had, like, a connection with them and loyalty to them, it made sense just in her personality of, like, how she keeps being loyal to designers and people that she came up with, basically.
While we were talking about Cardi's fashion, this is, like, a detour for podcast, but, like, let's talk about the nails.
Oh, yeah.
So the nails are a big thing. I know she's constantly posting pictures from her nail artist's store or location. And her nails, I thought, during Fashion Week, what she was posting was, like, very impressive.
Yes.
A lot of encrusting going on.
They were pink with flowers, bedazzled. Probably took hours to do.
I mean, you know, for as much as I love Lil Uzi Vert, he's not doing that. Right. At least not yet. But maybe he'll work with Cardi's nail art. So who does Cardi's nails? So, it's someone in the Bronx, right?
Yeah, it's Jenny Bui in the Bronx. B-U-I. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly. But on Fordham Road.
She's still basically
with the people.
She's bringing the Bronx to where she's at.
Yeah.
She's not turning her back on the Bronx. Right.
Her makeup artist, when I was following her, Shanta Laran, is her makeup artist from Sue's Rendezvous in Mount Vernon, the strip club that she worked at. And, you know, they still have the same relationship. She was like, I thought Cardi was so sweet, but she was so loud the first time I met her. And, you know, they still, like, are keeping their, like, relationship really tight.
And that is the thing that I think is probably most striking about the Cardi B kind of come up is, like, it doesn't feel mediated.
Right.
And that's something that I found in the music as well. Like, it doesn't feel mediated. Being in these industries and music and in fashion, we're so used to people adjusting their behavior to kind of try to play the role.
Right.
That it's like such a, like, to the face where you're like, oh, this person's not doing that.
Right.
Like, how rare. So, you know, seeing Cardi still dealing with her Bronx nail artist and, like,
from Fordham Road
and the strip club makeup artist.
Shanta, she's great.
Shouts to holding on to your past.
For sure.
Fashion Week seems to be at a particularly interesting moment because you really have a lot of young designers of color, really making clothes that are not only for slim bodies anymore.
Right.
You're starting to see like a creep of body diversity, racial diversity on the runway. But then you also have, like, designers in the Laquan Smith, smaller designers who basically don't bother themselves very much with kind of the preoccupations of the mainline of the fashion world. And so Cardi's ascent is actually, from a fashion perspective, timed really well to the emergence of this generation of designers.
Yeah. Laquan Smith had said he designs for, like, his mom and his aunts and his sisters, that it's like they all had curvy bodies. And Cardi fits into that mold, and body diversity and, like, race diversity is something that the fashion world has a problem with. And the fact that she went to these shows, designers of color and designers that really focus on, like, showing different types of women in their campaigns and different types of body types, it seemed like a pointed decision on her part to me that she would go to those specific designers rather than to others.
You know, she sat front row with Offset,
mm-hmm.
her boo. And I was thinking a lot about, you know, 5 to 10 years ago, thinking about what folks from hip hop were invited to these shows or allowed to sit in the front row. And, you know, it was Puff, you know, maybe Lil' Kim and her peak. But like, it wasn't kind of a given that if you were a well-regarded rapper that you would also be embraced in this world. And the fact that you have Cardi and Offset sitting front row, this shows to me, shows a lot about not just how far like hip hop has sort of suffused into everything, but also a lot of changes in fashion.
Right.
Like I feel like a bunch of things that say I've written for Style Section over the last few years have been about hip hop either literally or ideologically chipping away at kind of like some of the old guard fashion ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And to see them sitting front row, I was like, oh, wow, we're really just here. And not just in a V-Files kind of way where it's just like Trippie Redd showed up. You know, it's not like that, but it's more like these are the celebrities of 2017.
Right. These are the people who are relevant. And yeah. Also the designers themselves who are choosing who's in the front row. Fashion still has a huge diversity problem, but, you know, Rihanna broke into this. Shayne Oliver, one of the first black designers to design, for Helmut Lang. And they're the ones that are kind of driving that conversation and saying we do want more people of diverse backgrounds, of diverse body types in the front rows, and this is the kind of image that we want to portray. So it's also coming from people that are trailblazers in the fashion industry and doing this on their own.
One thing you said to me earlier was actually this was not Cardi's first Fashion Week.
No. She walked in the 2015 Gypsy Sport Show.
Which obvious. I mean, like, I did not know that, but, like, now that you're telling me that, it's like, of course she did.
Yeah. Rio Uribe is somebody that's, you know, really championed diversity in all types of ways. And so that made sense that she would walk in that show.
And so when you think of Cardi and fashion moving forward, do you see her maintaining this kind of carefully calibrated supporting of small designers with like a sprinkling of your like, you know, mainstream folks like Alexander Wang, who like obviously are like a little vulturish with youth culture? Or do you see it kind of like turning almost into like a, you know, not to sort of keep saying Nicki Minaj, but like mm-hmm. more of a Nicki thing where it's like she's going to end up front row at like some more very obvious mainline stuff?
She does love Balenciaga. She does love Gucci. She wouldn't say no, I don't think.
Are you listening, Alessandra?
But I think at the same time, she would still show up for Laquan and for the Blondes. She does love the high-end stuff. You know, she's told me she's getting addicted to the high-end stuff, mm-hmm. too. She has over 200 pairs of shoes, a lot of those bloody
Girl,
Christian
me
Louis
too.
Vuitton shoes.
Whatever. Whatever.
I don't have 200 pairs of shoes.
Yes, I do.
You do. I
yes,
don't.
Okay.
Cardi and John.
Yes. We can go box for box.
Loyalty is part of her thing, but I do think that, like, she really wants to be a trendsetter. Lady Gaga and Madonna are two of her icons, fashion mm-hmm. icons, and she's spoken about that. And she was, like, telling Colin Carter, her stylist, if Lady Gaga can wear a meat dress, then I need to be setting some trends soon, too.
Real talk, yeah.
So that's something that she wants to do, and I think she does want to get involved in the fashion industry more and maybe have, like, collaborations or something. And the end game is, they said, for her to be a fashion icon.
Right.
But also to have her hand in, as a real player in the fashion industry, which has typically, you know, not embraced. Like, they'll use a lot of diverse people as inspirations. But
not actually in creative roles,
correct.
Or models or whatnot.
Right.
And as you said earlier, it's like, underestimate Cardi at your own peril.
Right.
Okay, let's go out with a track from the first Cardi tape. Let's go out with On Fleek.
Pull up, like what's up? Everything on fleek, I do it nice, 7 days a week. Like oh my God, I don't do nothing for free, you know I gotta charge. When I'm done, they be like, you better.
That's our podcast for this week. Thank you to our guests, Rawia Kamir, Joe Coscarelli, Joanna Nikas. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, anywhere you get your audio content. You can listen to every podcast ever, which I super duper recommend, at nytimes.com/podcast. Tell us at podcast@nytimes.com. Email us and tell us which social media star you would like Joe Coscarelli to write an article about how they should become a rapper. And if the answer is Rice Gum, we're definitely going to make him do it. Our producer is Pedro Rosado with Headstepper Media, and we'll be back next week.
Boy, you better respect the curve. I'm on my bullshit. What you heard? All you may know. What you gon' learn? I pull up like, what's up? Everything on fleek. I do it nice. 7 days a week. Like, oh my, oh my, oh my God. I don't do nothing for free. You know I gotta charge. When I'm done, they be like, you